We've been doing a series about called Managing God's Money. Gallup poll says that 65% of all marriages argue about money, and 54% of all people that get divorced say that part of the reason they got divorced was over money. Maybe we should say in the vows, "Till debt do us part."
And I see that there is a blank entry here written to Sears. How much is that for?
Honey, Seth's right in the middle of his message. Can we do this a little bit later, please? He's talking.
No, I'd really like to do it now. I'd like to get this into the offering today.
People are looking at us, and this week I promise not to fall asleep during his sermon, okay?
I have news for you. People are always looking at us. I need the amount, honey.
No.
Okay. The amount.
Sorry, Seth, this will take a minute. Just do your thing. We're fine.
Sears, honey, what did you buy?
I was going to tell you, I got something. It's for Father's Day.
We don't have any children.
Oh, I know. I'm aware of that.
Honey, what did you do?
But when we do, they're going to love this thing.
Okay, what is it?
It's a barbecue. It's a barbecue.
We have a barbecue.
Oh, no, we have a grill. We now have a supermodel 2051 grill. The rotisserie, the chicken thing.
Do we really need that?
A place you can put sausages, a wok plate, stir fry every week. I can feel it.
Stir fry, huh? Okay, you are out of control. Your spending is out of control.
You don't understand. I want it.
I understand, honey, and I'm tired of trying to keep up with the Joneses.
I can't take it back. I'm not going to take it back.
Honey, where's the receipt?
I ate it, the cat ate it, the dog ate it.
Well, this is it. We cannot keep trying to keep up with the Joneses.
The Joneses? The Joneses. I know the Davidsons. Have you seen that boat they got? Oh my, it is huge. This is a big boat.
No boat.
This is not a tiny boat.
No boat.
Did I mention it's a big boat?
You are not getting a boat, honey.
14 girls to go on the back of that thing. It is huge. It's huge.
Okay, we just don't seem to be communicating. Let me see if I can put it another way that you might be able to comprehend in that small brain of yours. Okay, say we're on a boat. And waves are crashing over us. And the waves just keep coming over the boat. And we've got this little boat, kind of like this little checkbook. And we're going to drown.
What?
You see? We can't communicate.
Oh,
we can't talk about anything.
The waves, the checkbook, the waves. We're surfing the waves of the checkbook. We're all over it. I'm like, yeah. What?
Honey, this is important. This is our financial future, and we can't talk about it. We've been married for 6 years, and I don't want the next 6 years to be like this. I want to be able to talk about money.
I still don't get it.
Okay, let's see if I can try one more time. Okay, imagine a TV show.
Okay, rerun, prime time, what do we got?
It doesn't matter. It's a group of people, and everything's going really well for them. And then suddenly, disaster strikes. And it's almost as if they're castaways.
Gilligan's Island. SWAT. Bonanza.
No, honey, you just
Rat
don't
patrol.
Get it. This is serious.
No, I'm with you.
You just
heart
don't
to
get
heart.
It.
Not heart to heart. That was murder.
This isn't a joke.
Sorry.
This isn't a joke. Do you understand?
I was just thinking, though, why didn't Gilligan, why didn't he like Marianne? She was the hot one.
You know what, honey? I really mean it. You have got to get control of your spending. We have got to get this in check.
Okay. I'm going to work on this. I'm going to do whatever it takes. I'm going to work on this.
Okay, so I would like to be able to tithe today. How much is in the account? How much
you
can
know,
you write this
you
check
know,
for?
God likes a happy giver. So I'm going to happily give $5. He doesn't want a grumpy $200 this week. He wants a happy $5.
Honey, how much? I need to know.
I might have bought something yesterday also. I might have. I can't remember if I actually bought it or I thought I bought it.
What? What is it? now?
It's a big screen TV.
A big screen TV. We don't need a big screen TV.
Chris, you need me.
I looked at him. It's a talking TV. It's got everything. DVD, DVR. It's got remote. It's got a helmet remote. You just go ESPN. ESPN2. Military channel. I look dead sexy when it's on, too.
You've got to take it back. You have got to take it back.
Okay. I want this to work, okay? I want this to work. Let's just sit down quietly because everyone's looking at us.
Okay. Today, after church, we'll take back the barbecue and we'll take back the TV.
Okay. On the way home, we'll stop by Fletcher Jones just to make a little quick in there, see what they got.
Anybody recognize that kind of conversation in your home? Today we're looking at a message called Avoiding a Financial... Managing Finances God's Way is our series title, and the title for today's message is Avoiding a Financial Collapse. John, let's back up a couple to the cartoon. Joe Taxpayer and his wife are down here, and they have dinner guests, Freddie Mac and Fannie Mae. They've just finished, and the words out of the two of them are, more. You know, a few years ago, when our oldest was going off to college, we did all the FAFSA paperwork and sent off to the government to get help with our student, because the government loves to help students get through college, we had heard. A few weeks after doing all that paperwork, which took me forever, we got a letter back announcing that we made too much money. Well, they didn't say that. We didn't qualify. We didn't qualify to get any government help, i.e., Mindy and I made too much money. However, we found out that we did qualify to help some other students go to college. The next day at school, Mindy went in to her school, and there was a mother, a stay-at-home mom, and her husband works, and he makes about what I do. And the other mother was just giddy with delight. No kidding. They had just gotten their letter that they had qualified for loans and grants from the government. Oh, and we were so excited to hear that, weren't we? Kind of, you know, now we get to not only pay our mortgage, we get to help some other people pay their mortgage. Isn't that exciting? Well, today we're looking at avoiding a financial collapse. Most of the time when you think about financial collapse, people think just in terms of finances, the black and white of finances. One of the things we rarely think about is, what in the world does God have to do with my finances? There is nothing greater related to your finances than your relationship with God. Greater than what you make, greater than what you spend. Greater than what you give. Greater than what you save. Greater than how good a budgeting person you are. Let me read you some verses from Deuteronomy 28. And what I hope you'll get from this passage is that God wants to bless people. And that includes your finances, your business. This is from Deuteronomy 28. Now it shall be, if you diligently obey the Lord your God, being careful to do all his commandments, which I command you today, the Lord your God will set you high above all nations of the earth. All these blessings will come upon you and overtake you if you obey the Lord your God. And then he starts to enumerate these. Blessed shall you be in the city, and blessed shall you be in the country. Blessed shall be the offspring of your body and the produce of your ground, the offspring of your beasts, the increase of your herd, the young of your flock. Now remember, he's talking to a largely agrarian society. Most of these people out in the country were either farmers or ranchers. Blessed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl, meaning your pantry at home. Blessed shall you be when you come in, and blessed shall you be when you go out. The Lord shall cause your enemies who rise up against you to be defeated before you. They will come out against you one way and will flee before you in seven ways. The Lord will command the blessing upon you in your barns and in all that you put your hand to. He will bless you in the land which the Lord your God gives you. The Lord himself will establish you as a holy people, as he swore to you, if you keep the commandments of the Lord your God and walk in his ways. The Lord will make you abound in prosperity, in the offering of your body, the offering of your beasts, the produce of your ground, the land which the Lord swore to your fathers to give you. The Lord will open for you his good storehouse, the heavens, to give rain to your land in the seasons, and to bless all the work of your hand. You get the idea? That's not a hard thing for him to do. He's God. He's the creator. And do you hear the heartbeat of him there? He wants to bless his people. He longs for that. Now, a few verses down, there's what's called the curses section. This is, okay, if you decide not to take me up on the blessing part, this is what's going to come about. But it shall come about, if you do not obey the Lord your God, to observe to do all his commandments and his statutes, which I charge you today, that all these curses will come upon you and overtake you. Cursed shall you be in the city. Cursed shall you be in the country. Cursed shall be your basket and your kneading bowl. Cursed shall be the offspring of your body, the produce of the ground, of your herd, and the young of your flock. Cursed shall you be when you come in. Cursed shall you be when you go out. The Lord will send upon you curses, confusion, and rebuke in all you undertake to do, until you are completely destroyed, until you perish quickly on account of the evil of your deeds, because you have forsaken me. The Lord will make pestilence cling to you until he has consumed you and the land where you're entering to possess. Now, that's just a portion of that, but you get the idea. It's a simple proposition. God says, if you will obey me and do what I say, I want to pour out blessing upon you. But if you insist on leading life your way and just sort of give lip service to me, don't be surprised when resources dry up. Simple proposition. And I couldn't help but think about, you know, during the last few weeks of this whole economic thing that's going on, not just in our country now, but around the world, is what gives people security? What could give people security? First thing that went through my mind was Deuteronomy 28. It is no problem at all for God to be a source of blessing to us if we will follow him. Not a problem at all. How do we get into trouble? Proverbs says, human desires are like the world of the dead. There's always room for more. We looked at this last week. One of the things that I like about Proverbs, it's written by a man named Solomon, who was the richest man who had ever lived up until that time. And he wrote several books. One of them was the book of Ecclesiastes. And the book of Ecclesiastes basically tells us how to get in trouble regarding finances. How do we get to that place where we're in trouble regarding finances? And the book of Proverbs, as it relates to finances, tells us how to get out of trouble that we've gotten ourselves in regarding finances. And we looked at some of this last week. If you missed last week, I want to just do a very quick overview. It's not an exact overview of last week, for those of you who are here, but it's kind of a different nuance of looking at some of the same things. We hope that money will do something for us. It's not the money itself that we are after. It's the effect that money has that we hope will do. And there are three things in your handout. The first is, we hope having money will bring more satisfaction. More satisfaction. Ecclesiastes writes, you will never be satisfied if you long to be rich. You will never get all you want. We set ourselves up for growing emptiness when our yearning exceeds our earning. When our yearning exceeds our earning, we set ourselves up for emptiness. We can pray all we want to for God to give us peace and to fill our hearts with joy, but as long as yearning exceeds earning, we are going to experience emptiness. We also hope that money will bring us more significance. Significance. You go out to buy a car. Whether you like to admit it or not, what's on that hood is important, isn't it? That little ornament right up at the end. Or whatever it is, I don't know, what do they call the thing on the back? The little emblem, the emblem, the emblem on the back. People pay a lot of money for that hood ornament or that emblem on the back of their car. You can do that. Think it's going to help you be more important, more significant? you know, until the guy next door gets the better emblem and the better hood ornament. Luke 12:15, Jesus said, a man's true life is not made up of the things he owns, no matter how rich he may be. You do not want to confuse your valuables with your value. You do not want to confuse your net worth with your self-worth. Without knowing it, we do, most of us do that very thing. We assume our valuables are an indicator of our value. Our net worth is an indicator of our self-worth. You know, that feels pretty good for a while when you're going well. But when all of a sudden the bottom drops out or you hit a rough patch financially, all of a sudden you find your sense of value and your sense of worth plummeting. The problem is not, you know, God has abandoned me. The problem is in my heart I have set myself up on this basis. My valuables are an indicator of my value. Number three, we hope that having more will bring us more security. More security. Proverbs writes, your money can be gone in a flash. Let's go to the next verse, John. Your money can be gone in a flash as if it had grown wings and flown away like an eagle. You've probably experienced that if you have an IRA or if you have some stocks. There it goes. Where did all that stuff? We still don't know where all that money went. Billions and billions of dollars just disappeared. You know, I've heard people say, well, money talks. Well, in my experience, it doesn't talk all that much. It just seems to just kind of quietly slither off into a corner somewhere. All right, on the inside of your handout, Solomon was a wise man, and he said, but you know, most of the time we think that having more money will give us more things. Having more money also brings more problems. And he mentioned three that I'd like to mention here. What having more really means, it brings more expenses. More expenses. Solomon writes in Ecclesiastes 5, the more money you have, the more you spend, right up to the limits of your income. Does this sound familiar? 12 years ago, think about the money you were making then. Think about the money you're making today. If you knew back then, 12 years ago, you'd be making the money you're making right now, you'd be going, yes! Going to be on Easy Street. Well, it's not so easy, is it? Because now you've discovered you get to pay for accountants and attorneys and financial advisors and the upkeep. I remember asking Robert Hall when he was here, a guy, good friend of mine, he was in the car business, and my dad had a Jaguar when he was living, and I said, hey, Robert, I was just wondering, what would it be like if I bought an old Jaguar? He looked at me like I was the complete moron of the universe. He said, bad idea. I said, how come? He said, they break down way too often, and they are very expensive to keep up. More expenses with more money. Number two, more worries. More worries. A working man can get a good night's sleep, but the rich man has so much he stays awake worrying. You know, we all know who Joe the plumber is now, don't we? If you're watching the news. You know, Joe goes off to work at 8:30 in the morning. Goes off in his truck, does his stuff, checks out at 5 o'clock, goes home, has dinner, plays with the kids, helps out at home, we hope, makes love with his wife and goes to sleep. The life of Joe the plumber. That's what Solomon writes in Ecclesiastes. Same thing. But then what about the rich guy? But the rich man has so much he stays awake worrying. Let's say you're not Joe the plumber. You leave the house at 7:30 in the morning to get to work, or at 7, or at 6:30. You've got your briefcase with you with last night's work in it. You've got your laptop with last night's work in it. You get on the freeway for your 30-minute or hour commute. You get in there about 8 o'clock, and you work till about 6 or 6:30. You get back. When you leave the office, you aren't checking out. You're just changing locations because you have your briefcase with your files in it and your laptop that you're going to take home. Take that work home. And as you're on the way home, you're wondering, am I going to make that big sale? Is that deal going to close? Did I hire the right person? I think I'm going to need to fire somebody, but I just don't know who. A working man can get a good night's sleep, but the rich man has so much he stays awake at night worrying. What having more really brings, number three, more pain when it's lost. More pain when it's lost. Solomon writes, risky investments turn sour and soon there's nothing left. It's all swept away. The rest of his life, he's under a cloud, gloomy, discouraged, frustrated, and angry. If I set up in my heart that money is essentially my God, it's my trust, when it's gone, I'm in for a big, big fall. And that's not God's fault, that's my fault for elevating something so high in my heart. Gloomy, discouraged, fearful, frustrated, and angry. Now, I'd like to go into five principles about how to avoid financial trouble. But I want to say one thing first. It's been my experience in dealing with people, and I have this in my own life that I deal with what I think of as magical thinking. Magical thinking. Magical thinking is, now that I'm a Christian, if I pray about something, then God's just going to take care of it, and I really don't have to do anything myself about that situation. You with me? There's probably some area of your life where you have magical thinking, or you've had magical thinking. In January of this year, I weighed 180 pounds. And a lot of you know, Lance and I and a few guys in the church do these little sprint triathlons. I do not want to be out in the hot sun during the summer lugging around 180 pounds when I'm running or biking or trying to swim through the pool or the ocean with 180 pounds. By the time racing season came, my first race was in August or July, I think it was July, I wanted to be at 165. Now, I could pray all I want to about, God, I want to lose 15 pounds in 7 months. That's magical thinking. Now, what I've noticed is God will help me lose that 15 pounds, but it's not a solo operation. He expects me to do something about that. For example, to get on my running shoes and get all my body parts out on the street, moving away from the house. Or on my bicycle, or Monday, Wednesday, Friday to drive over to Irvine High School and jump in that pool, even though I usually am in lane one, the lowest lane of everybody. Although this past week was kind of funny. I got there a little bit late, and Coach Mike said, hey, they're doing some lessons down there with some new people coming. I have to push you in a different lane. He put me in about lane 12, and I swam with somebody that was impersonating Michael Phelps. Wow. And he was swimming with a guy in lane 11. They were doing all their workouts together. And so I had one on this side and one on this side. I was getting dizzy watching these guys swim by me. Well, the same is true with finances. You can pray and say, God, help us with our finances. And he wants to, as you see in Deuteronomy 20. But it's not a solo act on his part. There are things he expects us to do to be a part of that process. And I want to go over five of those today. Number one is keep good records. Keep good records. This is the principle of accounting. You want to know where that money is going. That's an important part of avoiding financial crisis. Let's go to the verse, John. Riches can disappear fast. And listen to what he says. So watch your business interests closely. Know the state of your flocks. Now, again, he's talking to a shepherd here, shepherds. Because money can disappear so quickly, you need to be on top of what you have and where it goes. It's the principle of accounting. Sometimes I hear people say, Seth, I just don't know where it all goes. Simple formula for you. Ignorance plus easy credit equals catastrophe. Ignorance plus easy credit equals catastrophe. There are four things that you need to know when it comes to this area. You need to know what you own. You need to know what you owe. You need to know what you earn. And you need to know where it goes. All four of those things are important. What you own, what you owe, what you earn, where it goes. All four of those things. Mindy calls me Billy Budget. What she's referring to is this one here. You know, sometimes I have people say, you know, Seth, I just don't have time to keep track of records. And I think of, well, how much do you worry about your finances? If you took the time worrying about finances and putting into keeping records, there'd be a whole lot less to worry about, is the principle here, the principle of accounting. Number two is plan your spending. This is called budgeting. A budget is simply a plan of where you would like the money to be allocated. Now, it is not the Ten Commandments. If you're married and you make a budget, that is not now the law of the Medes and the Persians. It's just a plan. It's just something that you want to be flexible about, you want to talk about together, much like Chris and Tasha did in our skit there. The idea here is you do not want to fly by the seat of your pants regarding spending. If you fly by the seat of your pants regarding spending, you're going to spend it all. Simple. Plan carefully and you will have plenty, Solomon writes. If you act too quickly, you will never have enough. Now, there's one aspect here that probably hits most of us here, and that's the aspect of shopping. One study showed that the average American spends 6 hours a week, I love this, in shopping-related activities. I don't know what all those activities are, but that's almost an hour a day, on average, shopping-related activities. And this study was interesting. It said that the more educated you are, the more time you're going to be shopping. And I know some of you wives just gave an elbow to your husband saying, see, I am intelligent. I got my degree at the University of Nordstrom's. I'm going to get a graduate degree there this week. Now, what he says by, if you act too quickly, what does he mean by that? He means impulse buying. You know, the worst time to make a decision about when to wake up, what time do I really need to wake up? It's when the alarm clock goes off. Oh, golly, I'm so tired. Let's see, it's 6:30, but if I sleep for 10 more minutes, can I still get everything that done I need to get done? That's the absolute worst time to make that decision. You make that decision the night before. You know when the worst time to make a spending decision is? When you're in the mall. You make the decision about your spending when you're at home. Although now it's even a little bit more difficult than that because of the internet. Some of you need to get outside of the home. That would help you spend less money out there in public. Now, Proverbs 21:20 in the Good News Translation says, stupid people spend their money as fast as they get it. Stupid people spend their money as fast as they get it. That's kind of, I think of that as sort of like God's IQ test. Now, marketing people know exactly how we operate. There is one magical word. It is the holy grail of marketing. The marketing people know that if they can bait the hook with this one word and you walk by, they've got you. You know what that word is? Exactly. Sale. Sale. I've been at the mall. I've watched how people named Gatchel operate. People named Gatchel walk by the store and look in. And they're looking for one thing. It's one word with four letters. Sale. And if they find that word sale, they make right-hand turns. And you know where they go? They go to that rack where it says sale. Now, it's been my observation that that's usually just kind of some junk stuff. Because back behind that rack, they've got some more signs. Sale. And what they're trying to do is get you to the very back of the store, because apparently in their mind, it's a really long trek from the back of the store back out the door. It might take you 2 or 3 days to get out of there, depending on who you're with. There are a couple of people I know that have gotten themselves into some serious debt. And they did an idea that I thought was pretty cool. They got a big bowl of water. They took their credit cards and put the cards in the bowl of water and stuck the whole bowl in the freezer and then stuck everything on top of that. So that, you know, in an emergency, you can get to that credit card. But you're not going to be taking that big bowl with you to the mall or going out buying a car. Plan your spending. You want to nip it in the budget. I've been waiting all week to say that. Apparently I didn't need to wait all week. Okay. Number 3. Save for the future. I don't know why I got excited about nip it in the bud. I don't know. We'll talk about this at the Gatchel House this afternoon. Guarantee you.
Dad, you are such a moron. I was so embarrassed.
The wise man saves for the future. Wise man saves for the future. In Japan, Japanese families save on average 25% of their income. European families save on average 18%. American families save on average 5%, which includes our retirement accounts. 5%. Now, how come? Again, it's my observation that many Americans are caught up with the people who live next door or down the street from us. You see the Joneses and they get a new car. And all of a sudden there's something going on inside of you where you just have to get a new car. And it can't be a 4-year-old car or a 6-year-old car or an 8-year-old car that you could pay off in a year. No, it's got to be a car payment that it's going to take you 6 or 7 years to pay off. And let me tell you, there is no such thing as an easy payment.
Why, Mr. Gatchel, we can give you this car for only 50 easy payments.
The first payment is okay. I wouldn't say easy. But the rest of them are not easy. They're a pain in the neck, in my opinion. We're trying to keep up with other people. All what it really comes down to is our lifestyle. We assume that our lifestyle is okay just as it is. Is that a good assumption? Depends on how much you like debt. Depends on how much you like payments.
Proverbs 13:11 says, "He grows rich who accumulates little by little." Fourth principle is tithe back to God. This is the principle of giving. And God is really clear about this. He says, if you want my blessing, tithing in the Hebrew, me, is the word tenth. One-tenth. Tithing is not a word that is a euphemism for giving. Tithing is an amount in the Hebrew. It means one-tenth. And the scriptures say off the top, right off the bat, a few verses related to this. Proverbs 3, 9 and 10. Honor the Lord by giving him the first part of all your income, and he will fill your barns to overflow. If you read the Old Testament, you find out that they weren't all that different than we are. One of the things that Moses had to deal with the people of Israel, was they came to the Sabbath, and you know, back then they gave sheep or lambs or cattle. And a sheep that had a broken leg was not worth much on the market. And a sheep that was speckled or striped was not worth much on the market. But a sheep or a cow that had this coat was all one color, that brought the greatest amount of revenue in the marketplace. So what God's people started doing was they started bringing on the Sabbath their sheep, and oxen and goats that had broken legs or worse, or were the speckled ones and the striped ones.
The principle was, which is said here, elucidated here in Proverbs 3, is, am I honoring God? It's not just that I give something, but am I honoring Him as I give? That is the issue. You might think about, why does God say to give to Him first? Well, you might think of a totem pole. And I would say that living here in Orange County, if you made that totem pole be the priorities of importance from the top to the bottom, you probably have, for most people I know, kids would be number one at the top. My kids are at the top. And then probably health would be, the health of our family would be number two. And that we get to live here in this community, we get to live in this nice house and drive these nice cars. So our lifestyle would be number three. And then our work would be number four. And then our spouse would be number five, sad to say, but that's my observation. Number five. But God's nowhere on there. What He knows is that if He's not at the top of the totem pole, you're in trouble. It's just a matter of time. We are going to screw it up if He's not first. I'll screw it up in my marriage. I'll screw it up with my kids. I'll screw it up with my finances. I'll screw it up in my personal life. I'll screw it up at work. Just a matter of time. If He's first, He has the ability to help me deal with everything else that's under that totem pole where it ought to be. Now, if that totem pole does not have Him first, let's say it has Him seventh, what do you suppose a loving God is going to do with you if He knows you're going to screw it up unless He's up there at number one? He's going to mess with your totem pole. Just like you would do with your kids if you saw the same problem with them. It's not because God's mean. It's because He knows, left to ourselves, our own priorities, our own values, how we think about life, our totem pole that we have as a structure is going to make a mess of things. Deuteronomy 14 says, the purpose of tithing is to teach you to always put God first. It's not that God needs money. It's that money becomes a representative action, an audiovisual of the true state of your heart. When you give 10%, you're going to be gulping the first few times you do that, just like I did and Mindy did when she started, and other Christians, everybody gulps the first time. What you're saying is, God, I believe Your word. I'm going to obey You. I'm going to trust You that You can do a whole lot more with the 90% than I can do with 100%. Most of you know I drive a car that's about 13 or 14 years old. I bought it when it was 4 years old. Other than oil changes, tires, and brakes, I've hardly had to put a dime in that car. And one of the reasons why I think that's true is this principle here. Other than brakes and oil changes for Mindy and tires, virtually the same thing with her. She drives a 98. Car's about 10 or 11 years old. God is able to do much more with the 90% where I give Him 10 than I can do with the 10%. I've observed in our household, we don't have things that break down that much as other people seem to have things break down. What you're saying is, God, I'm going to trust You. God wants to show Himself trustworthy in little things like money, because each of you know you need to trust Him with a whole lot bigger things than just money. If you've got kids and they get to be teenagers, you are trusting God like crazy for your kids and their outcome. A lot bigger than money. Or if you go to the doctor and the doctor gives you the big C word about your health or your spouse or your kids, you're trusting God with a whole lot more than just something little like money. Where do we learn that kind of trust? Through finances. That's the place where trust, our real trust in the heart state of our heart, intersect. Where we learn to trust God and that God is trustworthy. On the back of your handout, number five, enjoy what you have. Enjoy what you have. This is one of the antidotes to
the spending to impulse buying. Enjoy what you have. It's better to be satisfied with what you have than to always be wanting something else. Have you noticed these four phases? Maybe you're in these four phases right now. Number one, phase one, the phase of yearning. What you want. And yearning exceeds your earning. Phase one. Phase two, you get overextended, as we say. I'm paying a car payment I have no business paying. I'm paying a mortgage I have no business paying. I've put us in a lot of financial stress because of the types of decisions that I've made or we've made regarding money. Phase three, I am hustling so much trying to keep ends meet that stress is moving through our entire household. And there's not enough time to spend with the kids and do fun stuff together. And then number four, family life deteriorates. Those are four common phases you see a lot of. Most of the time, we don't see people go through these until they hit phase four. But one, two, and three are moving us in that direction. Sometimes I hear parents with teenagers say, you know, we're just going so fast, we can't slow down. We can't slow down. We're trying to make ends meet. But someday we'll slow down. You know when you'll slow down? When your kids are out of the house. And by then it's too late. We end up with buying them things, hoping that will sort of buy us some love and affection, or they'll feel loved and some affection from us through things. And most kids are not that crazy about things if they don't have your time. It all comes back to a lifestyle question. You'll slow down when you decide to slow down. And think about your lifestyle. Solomon says, if God gives a man wealth and prosperity, he should be grateful and enjoy what he's worked for. It is a gift from God. Be content. Be thankful. Keep good records, number one. Number two, plan your spending, principle of budgeting. Number three, save for the future. Number four, tithe back to God. Number five, enjoy what you have. Last thing, and then we'll close. You may be thinking, you know, Seth, I think our family finances are out of control. And it's been my observation with families that family finances that are out of control are really a reflection more of families that are out of control or lives that are out of control. It's just that finances are sort of like the warning signal. What they should tell us is that the person that's running this operation, me, that's running my life, is out of control. I'm not a good captain of my life. I've learned that. I've learned that the hard way. None of us are good captains of our life. We lead ourselves into messes. We do need another captain. Thankfully, Jesus Christ died. He's a good captain. He can even do something with a screw up like me if I'll put him first. If I put him seventh, not that much help. If I put him fifth, not that much help. If I put him second, not that much help. But if I put him first, you'll watch over the years, you'll see a different guy emerge over the years. A different man. Same will happen with you. God's really good at that when we put him first. Let's pray together. Father, it is amazing how easy it is for you to engage with your people about money. You long to pour out blessing upon your people. And it grieves you to bring cursing upon our lives. But you will do it much like we spank our kids or we ground our kids. Because we've gotten off base somewhere. And it's critical that we get back where we need to get. Would you use the principles of your word from Proverbs and Ecclesiastes, the other places we've looked today? And would you draw us to yourself in fresh ways Help us to let you be first. Help us to put you first in our life, at the top of the totem pole. And not just to give words to that, not just to say it, but to live that today and tomorrow and the next day. Thank you for Jesus Christ, the great captain, lover of our soul. Thank you, Lord Jesus, that you came to save us and rescue us from ourselves. We honor you today in Jesus' name. Amen.